Turn to the book of 1 Thessalonians, chapter 2. 1 Thessalonians, chapter 2. We'll read verses 9 through 12. For ye remember, brethren, our labor and travail, laboring night and day, because we would not be chargeable unto any of you. We preached unto you the gospel of God. Ye are witnesses, and God also, how holy and justly and unblameably we behaved ourselves among you that believe. As ye know, how we exhorted and comforted and charged every one of you as a father doth his children, that you would walk worthy of God, who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory. Paul, of course, is the author of this letter. He's writing to a very, very young church, the church in Thessalonica. The record of the establishment of that church you can read in Acts chapter 17. In these verses, Paul gives testimony of his care for them, of his concern for them. In verses 1 through 6, he likened himself to a steward in his ministry to them. Verses 7 and 8 has a loving mother, and in our text has a concerned father. And our text forms a profile for fathers. And on this Father's Day, we want to consider fatherhood. The subject of the message is the father factor. The father factor. And though we be speaking primarily to fathers, the lessons are for more than just fathers. We also exhort mothers to make application to your own role in the appropriate way that it applies. The truth is that we as parents ought to give the highest priority to being what God would have us to be, so that we can bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Do not be deceived in this matter. If we are not what we ought to be before God, we cannot truly bring our children up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. So, as parents, we must not allow life to cause us to lose sight of what it's all about. So first of all, we want to just consider fatherhood in general, very briefly. Fatherhood in general. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, one out of every three children in the United States live without their biological father. One out of three. And only 39% live with both biological parents. More than 20 million children live in a home without the physical presence, not just of their biological father, but not without the physical presence of a father. And then, of course, there are untold millions that have fathers who are physically present, but really aren't there. They are emotionally absent. Fathers are fast disappearing from American homes. In fact, if it were declassified as a disease, fatherlessness would be an epidemic worthy of attention that you would give to a national emergency. And the fact that fathers are fast disappearing from American homes, that is a national emergency. The impact of fatherlessness is seen and felt in really every aspect of society, and has some factor in almost every social ill facing children. Fatherlessness, without going into all the statistics, you can look statistics up, but fatherlessness is a huge factor in much poverty. It can be a factor in emotional and behavioral problems in children. It is a factor in crime. It is a factor in incarceration. It is a factor in teen pregnancy and sexual activity. It is a factor in drug and alcohol abuse. 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless children. And 90% of homeless or runaway children are fatherless. So again, fathers are fast disappearing from homes. And it creates a problem. And because of that, we have become a society of absent fathers, leaving unstable families, leaving behind unstable families and lives. And in the past several decades, fatherhood has been grossly distorted with television on a regular basis, depicting the father as the family idiot and as naive and incompetent, bested at every turn by his oh-so-clever wife and his brilliant and condescending children. That's the picture we've gotten for decades. And many men, women, and children have bought into that idea. And sadly, our society seems to see fathers as an expendable part of the family unit. And tragically, many men today have failed to grasp the importance of their role as a man and as a father. Fathers are more than just a biological necessity. They have a vital role in bringing strength and stability into the home. And from our text, we see that a father is to work to support his family. Again, Paul's speaking of his care for the church there at Thessalonica, but he uses the metaphor of a father. And he says, I labored and I travailed. And again, that is what a father will do. A father will work to support his family. Labor and travail. That speaks of hard work and struggle. Why? Because he loves his family. From our text, we see that a father is a good example. In verse 10, he talks about his behavior before them. Holy and justly and unblameably, we behaved ourselves among you that believe. A father is to be a good example in all areas of life. From our text also, it is implied that a father is to be an authority figure. He's the head of the home. And he is to be an encourager and a teacher of good things. Notice verse 11. As you know how we exhorted That implies authority. It's communication. We comforted or we encouraged. And we charged every one of you has a father. So our text presents a picture of the love, the desire, and the care of a father. And oh, how thankful we ought to be for such fathers. Amen. Fathers who love their families. I'm not talking about Christian fathers not right now, but just fathers that love their families enough to get a job, work, support their family, to be an example, to be an encourager in good things. We ought to be thankful. By God's design, both fathers and mothers bring ingredients into the home that are absolutely crucial to the well-being of the home. And together, fathers and mothers, and that's God's design, by the way, together, fathers and mothers are the vital force in shaping the lives of children. The school system is not the vital force of shaping the lives of our children. But mothers and fathers are to be that force. So do not be deceived. Fathers are not expendable parts of the family unit. So having considered fatherhood in general, there is something even higher, that being Christian fathers. And we want to spend the rest of the message speaking to fathers that are saved. Christian fathers have even a greater responsibility, a greater privilege, and a greater opportunity in fatherhood. Again, in our text, Paul uses the metaphor of a father to describe his ministry to the Thessalonian church. And again, we see his labor, his example, his encouraging, his teaching. And all of that went beyond fatherhood in general. It involved spiritual matters. Verse 12. That you walk worthy of God, who hath called you unto his kingdom and glory. The Christian father goes beyond fatherhood in general, and he is concerned about their spiritual well-being. And he sets an example for them. And we know today that there are no perfect fathers outside of God. There are no perfect examples other than God Himself. And knowing that, we want to look at the Word of God, at some godly fathers. They're not perfect. And they are not perfect examples. But there are examples. Things that we need today. Things that fathers need to be today. And I'm speaking right now to Christian fathers. Those who are saved. First of all, consider Enoch. We read of him in Genesis chapter 5, verses 21 through 24. We read in verse 21 that he begat Methuselah. In verse 22, that he begat sons and daughters. So Enoch was a father. And notice his qualities as a father. Verse 22 and verse 24. We are told that Enoch walked with God. Here is a father who lived in a wicked and degenerate society. He lived in pre-flood times when the emphasis of life was not upon the worship of God. The emphasis of life was not walking in a way that was pleasing to God. The emphasis of the times was upon the pleasures of life. And the whole attitude of the day was eat, drink, and be merry. It was a time of mockers and despisers. It was a day when people took great pleasure in sin. When people spoke against the message of God. When people mocked the promises of God. And they were ridiculing the godly. It was a time when very, very few loved God. And even those who professed to love God, they were being drawn aside by the daughters of men and by the pleasures of the hour. So it was a time when compromise was on every hand. It was the order of the day. People were making unholy alliances. And God's people were being swallowed up with the ways and the philosophies and the pursuits of the world. It was a time of indifference. It was a time of coldness toward God and His ways. It was not only a wicked and degenerate and perverted society, but it was getting worse and worse by the day. And this father, this man, this husband, in those times, walked with God. Here is a man. Here is a husband. Here is a father who walked with God. That means God was real to him. His life, his activity was not moving in the direction of the world. His life and his activity was moving in the direction of God. You cannot walk with somebody if you're going in opposite directions. Enoch walked with God. His whole life, the activities of his life, were moving in the direction of God. Keep in mind, this man is a husband. He is a father. His life was not bound by the pattern of the world around him. He walked with God. God was the substance of his life. God was the priority of his life. God was an influential force in his life. It was God who gave him energy in his life. And Enoch walked with God. So here is a man, side by side with God. Not just occasionally, but in life. He walked with God. Through all the various seasons, and through all the needs of life, he walked with God, side by side with God. In life's difficulties and in life's battles and sorrows and trials and burdens of life, here is a man who had a family. That means he had burdens. But in all of those burdens, here is a man side by side with God. Those are the fathers we need today. Here is a man in contact with God. Here is a man in companionship with God. He's together with God. He's associated with God. He's identified with God. These are the fathers we need today. As he walked with God, he no doubt received direction from God. He received guidance from God. He received counsel from God. He received comfort, strength, refreshment, peace, and even rebuke from the Lord. And all of that would make Enoch a better husband and a better father. Again, you want to be a good father to your children, start with loving God and then love your wife. Love the mother of your children. Love the mother of your children. Enoch walked with God. And as he did, I believe he leaned upon him. He depended upon God. He fed upon God. He could see and he could feel God. He was occupied with God and he enjoyed God. These are the fathers that we need today. And all that each one of us that are saved would commit to such. We also read of Noah. Genesis 5 and verse 32, we read that Noah begat Shem, Ham, and Japheth. He was a father. And he, living in a time much like Enoch, except worse by this time, he lived in a time that was overcome with evil, and violence, and corruption. A time saturated with sin and rebellion. But he was a righteous and separated man, a man of unwavering faithfulness. Again, he's not perfect. We know about his sin later. We read in Genesis 6 and verse 9 that Noah walked with God. And we read in Hebrews 11 and verse 7 that Noah was warned of God. That is, here is a man that's in tune with God. Fathers, our families need a man in tune with God. They do not need a man in tune with the world. They need a man in tune with God. And as a result, Enoch moved with fear, reverence. And what did he do? He prepared an ark to the saving of his house. He was willing to stand and to live his life upon, thus saith the Lord. For the sake of his house, he moved to prepare an ark for the saving of his house. Again, these are the fathers we need today. I think of Abraham. Genesis 18 and verse 19, God said of him, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord." So here is a father, and God said that this man would direct his children and his household to faithfully serve the Lord. He would teach them what life is all about. Life is all about the Lord. Life is about serving God. And Abraham would teach his children what life is about. These are the fathers that we need today. We know that Abraham would be willing to give his son Isaac entirely unto the Lord. We need that today. For mothers and fathers to be willing to just give their children over to the Lord completely. We read in James 2 and verse 23, Abraham believed God. We need fathers that believe God. And then it goes on to say, he was called the friend of God. What a statement. What a statement. We know that Christ is the friend that sticketh closer than a brother. He's the best friend we've got. But what a statement when God says that we are the friends of Him. Abraham was a father. He was a husband. He was a father. He was a friend of God. We need fathers that are friends of God. I think of Job. Job chapter 1 and verse 2, we read that he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. He was a father. And we read 3 times concerning his character. He was perfect. He was upright. He feared God. And he eschewed evil. That's not the kind of fathers that the world wants today, but that's the kind of fathers that the world needs today. But notice in Job chapter 1, Job chapter 1, and verse 5. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, we see in verse 4 that his children are all together, that Job sent and sanctified them and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually, that is, rise up early in the morning and offer burnt offerings for his children. He was concerned enough about his children that every morning he got up and brought his children before the Lord. Those are the fathers we need today. Fathers who will continually bring their children before the Lord in prayer. Next, we want to consider Jairus, and we'll spend the rest of our time on this man. In Mark chapter 5, in verse 22, we see that he was a ruler of a synagogue. It is also told that, as you read the account, that he had a 12-year-old daughter. He was a father. He was a father. Here's a man who held a high social position, a very important position. A man who was known among the people. A man of power and influence among the people. A man who had many, many responsibilities. Responsibilities outside of his home. Fathers need to make a living. They have responsibilities outside of the home. But in spite of all the responsibilities that Jairus had, he did not let life get in the way of his fatherhood. He did not let life get in the way. He loved his family. And he was very much aware of their needs just like Job. In verse 23 of chapter 5, we hear him say to Jesus, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." Death, like a cloud, was hanging over his home. There was the threat of something that would completely disrupt that home. Jairus was alert to that. He was fully aware that a sickness had come into his home. He wasn't so busy with his outside responsibilities that he was unaware of a sickness that had come into his home. We need to take warning. He was alert to, and he was aware of the need of his daughter. And may I say, there is a sickness that has come into many homes, far, far, far more serious than any physical sickness that might bring physical death. And as a result, there is a far more dangerous threat in homes today than just a physical sickness. But Jairus was aware. And we need fathers today who are aware of real needs, not superficial needs, real needs. And who will not misidentify the needs? "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." He realized the need. He also had a burden concerning the needs of his daughter. Verse 23 again, "My little daughter lieth at the point of death." He loved her. He cherished her. She's sick. She's about to die. This caused him to feel an inner disturbance and an inward pain. And he went to the Lord. And he unashamedly sought Christ, recognizing the need of his daughter, fully aware of the threat to his family, and having this heavy, heavy burden. He felt a compulsion and stirring from God. "I am going to seek Christ on behalf of my child." He felt a compulsion to do that. Those are the fathers we need today. Notice he did not send his wife. He did not send one of his servants. He went to seek Christ, recognizing his children's needs. Now, most of us here, our children are grown. They have families of their own. But we still have a responsibility to seek Christ on their behalf. There are many things we cannot do. There are things that it's not our place to do. Parents need to learn that lesson too. That's a different message. But we can and we ought to seek Christ unashamedly on behalf of our children. May I say that this became a priority with Jairus. His priority was no longer that he's the ruler of the synagogue. His priority is to see Christ. This became the business of the day. And he was not ashamed that everyone knew that he was going to seek Jesus Christ. And because of the nature of the rising opposition that Jesus was facing, Jairus now risked his place and his position and his status in the community by seeking Christ that day. But none of that mattered. None of that mattered. He was willing to seek Christ at all cost to himself. I don't know if his daughter knew what Dad was doing. He just sought Christ. And we need to seek Christ on behalf of our children. They don't have to know about it. If they do know about it, that's fine too. But they don't have to know. You see, we need to realize that love is more than a closet full of toys and drawers full of clothes. It's seeking Christ on their behalf. That took courage for a ruler of a synagogue to personally and visibly seek Jesus Christ. He fell at his feet. He was not ashamed to do so. He should not be ashamed to fall at the feet of Jesus. He should not be ashamed for our children to see us at the feet of Jesus Christ. In seeking Christ, he believed. He said, I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her. He believed that Christ was what his family needed. Oh, we need parents today who realize that the Lord is what my family needs. The Lord is what my children need. It's not about a better job. It's not about better circumstances. Nothing wrong with a better job. But that's not what it's about. They need the Lord. And Jairus knew that. He too, just like Enoch and Noah, was not ashamed to walk with the Lord. In verse 24, we read, and Jesus went with him. So now we have this picture. Jairus and Jesus are walking together. Here is a ruler of the synagogue, unashamed to be seen with Jesus Christ. And oh, how we need fathers unashamed to be seen with Jesus Christ. And lastly, he unashamedly brought Christ into his home. In verse 23, he prayed, come. He invited the King of Glory into his home. We live in a day when most are more interested in getting the Lord out, keeping the Lord out of the home, rather than bringing him in. Verse 38, we read, and he cometh to the house of the ruler of the synagogue. Verse 39 says, and when he came in, in verse 40, after he came in, he put some things out. He put some people out. And that, I guarantee you, will happen when Jesus comes in. There's some things that are going. There's some things that are going to be cast out. And Jairus did not argue or question. He was fully submitted to Christ. And you notice when Christ came into that home, he told certain individuals to leave. Christ now had authority in that home. And that is who was to have authority in our home. And Jairus brought Christ into his home and submitted to the authority of the Lord in that home. And in this day when the forces of hell are unleashed, have unleashed all their fury against the home, we need some fathers who recognize the need of Christ in their home and have a desire for Christ to be in their home, and who are in a position to invite Jesus Christ into their home, and who bring Jesus Christ into their home. These are the fathers that we need so desperately today. Fathers who desire Christ to be in the home and who bring Him into the home. Those are happy homes. May I say, there is nothing that will replace Jesus Christ in the home. Nothing. Nothing can replace that. Don't be deceived. If I can get this better position, get this better job, it'll be better for my family. Not if it costs you Christ. It'll never be better. Never. Need to bring Christ to our home. We thank God that there are in this building fathers that follow these examples. Thank God for godly fathers. Thank God for godly parents. And it's not getting easier to be a godly parent, because you're swimming against the current the whole way. But it's an absolute necessity. This is a crisis. Again, there are good fathers who are not saved. They provide for their families. They love their families. They care for their families. They do the best they can. And we thank God. We thank God for those fathers also. But you and I that are saved, we have even a greater privilege, a greater opportunity, a greater responsibility to be what God would have us to be, so that we can be the husband we ought to be, so that we can be the father that we ought to be. As fathers, we need to just realize this simple truth. My children do not need me to fix everything in their life. They do need me to pray to the one who can fix what's wrong. I can't fix everything. I can't fix everything in my own life, let alone someone else's. But I can go to the one who I know can fix it. Know that we would be fathers at the feet of Jesus. Fathers at the feet of Jesus, pleading for our families that God would watch over them in a special way. My children are grown. Again, most of your children are grown. But every day they have to go out and face this world. And every day they ought to know, Mom and Dad's praying for me. They're praying for me. Oh, that our children know that. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse of song. Let's all stand.